Recorder now, and I am going to switch over, connecting.
Yeah, how you doing, boys and girls? Guess what? You got Fish and Frank here. Yeah, and I got Robert in a chair across from me. And we are from Fish and Frank's, and I guess that's why we say Fish and Frank, and I'm called Fish and Frank, so it all just kind of ties in together. I'm not really sure how all that works, but the name of the show could be Radio Fishing. It could be The Fishing Zone, but basically we're like Fish and Frank's. And we're going to kind of get you ready for the weekend. That's what this show is going to be about every Thursday. And we're here on WKDW, if I get this right, 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio. And I got to tell you, didn't know much about the station, checked out their website, went around and came up and met some just extraordinary people up here. Been having a blast talking to everybody and getting ready for the show. And I guess the show's about to start. Should we start the show, Robert?
Probably be a good idea.
Really? Now?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll start now then. All right. Well, basically what we're going to kind of go over, we're going to go over freshwater, saltwater, land-based fishing, and boat-based fishing. And I guess let's start off with inshore. What species of fish would be the best bet to catch right now?
You got quite a few different ones, to be honest with you. I mean, the snook fishing is probably one of the easiest ones, but there are a lot of small guys around unless you're really willing to go out at night.
All right. So with the snook, what else is there? Let's go over a list and then come back to them individually.
Okay. You got your snook, your trout, redfish, flounder, and pompano have been making a pretty good pop the last couple of days.
All right. Now I'm going to have to throw in Spanish mackerel and possibly king mackerel on top of that.
Yeah, most of those are offshore, though.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, but not inshore. All right. No Spanish mackerel really up inside.
Not too much. There have been a few stragglers, but not. I think it's incidental fun bycatch.
All right. Well, sticking with the inshore thing, let's see. Do we got a list here so I can look at it? Robert made up the list here. And inshore, let's go flounder. Now, I went out for flounder last Sunday with my dad, and we got got our butts handed to us. We were out there. The wind's blowing. It was rough. We started out on the east side. Really wasn't doing much. And so we said, well, before the wind picks up too bad, we're going to head over to the west side. So we went over to the entrance to Muddy Bay, and we were started out fishing there because I've caught flounder there before. Shrimp under bobbers was what we were using because we caught them on that before, and that was the bait we had.
Good choice.
So start out, and flounder fishing with me and Dad is always kind of fun because we throw out a line with a bobber on it so we know where it is, one for him, one for me, and then we each take a rod and free line a shrimp out. So we got four rods out. Dad gets a hit on one. I just set my rod down in the rod holder, so I had one on the back of the boat, one on my live well, which is just up from that. Dad was holding one and one up in the front. Well, Dad gets a hit, and I go up and I go racing the back of the boat and try and get the rod up, start to reel it up. The line had blown over the second line and tangled with it. And then Dad's rod had blown over the one in the front and was tangled with it when he was trying to reel his fish in. So here we are trying to get these rods up. They're all tangled. Finally get them out of the way. Lands it. Yeah, it was an okay snapper, but a little short. But in the meantime, we finally get all the lines untangled. Now the wind's blowing pretty good. So we got to back up. Said, okay, we're going to pack up. We're going to head back to the east side because the wind was coming out of the east, so it makes the west side of the harbor a lot rougher, a lot more dangerous.
Right.
We get back over there, go to the old ice house in front of Pirate Harbor. All right, this is good, right? Same scenario, put two lines out and on the bobbers. We go to free line it. And again, and I don't know why I did it, I set my rod in the holder to go get a drink, right? This is 15, 20 seconds tops. I'm going to go over to the cooler, take it out, get my soda, open the lid, and he hooks a fish. And watching the fish, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 the rod tip starts to pop, and Bob, you know what that means.
Yep.
Meow, meow, kitty, kitty, kitty. So, you know, I'm looking at this going, I said, well, I better get the rod out of the way. Anyway, so go to the back of the boat, reel up first line, it's tangled. Grab the second one. No, that's tangled with the first one. That catfish had ran from the front of my boat 20 feet. It's 24-foot boat, so it's 16, 18 feet. Ran down, tangled those two. So I go all the way up to the front of the boat, start pulling the rod up, and that catfish had made it up, tangled that one, and all of the other lines. This is the first time. My dad says, what, is this your first day fishing?
That's what I was just going to ask.
But now, wait a minute. I can't go along with this. I'm sitting there looking at this going, now, wait a minute. There's two of us on the boat. Why am I the one getting the blame? It was his catfish.
Because you're the one with the name.
Yeah, I know I'm fishing Frank, so I'm supposed to, you know, I whistle, whoo, fish, come, jumping boat, you know. But I just don't know why I got all the blame. And this is the first time. I mean, literally, out of hundreds of or thousands of charters and fishing trips and everywhere, I've never had one trip where all the rods got tangled. Literally, at one point, I was sitting there, and all four lines were coming into a central point, and they were all spread out from the bottom of it. It was something out of a horror movie. I don't know what was going on. But I got to tell you, boys and girls, if you think it just happens to you, no. There I am. And it's with my dad. So I will never live this down. Till the day my dad will be on his deathbed going, yeah, well, you couldn't get those lines untangled on the boat, you know. Just the way it goes. I can't figure it out.
No, that's not fun.
Anyway, so here we are. We didn't catch any flounder over there, but it was too rough. We couldn't go out on Cape Hayes. Now I was going to fish those. There's about three indents on the bar itself. One used to be a trough that went all the way through. And I got the numbers for them. You got to go out and you literally start at the shore and idle out watching a depth finder. When you see it drop down a foot or two, that's the place I'm talking about. You got to do a lot of Lewis and Clark. They're not easy to find. I've got them in my GPS, but I spent hours, you know, going up and down the bar with the depth finder on looking to see where the holes were. But those holes are historically really good on snapper and flounder out there. But I never got a chance to fish them. We got blown off the water and sent back.
Right. Yeah, it's a little windy for that.
Yeah. So anyway,
open exposed area.
So where were you thinking about flounder?
I've been getting some reports from down in Matlache area, actually, between Two Pines and the Matlache Bridge.
By the Indian Fields and up in there, Smokehouse, I think, or the Ice House, too.
On both sides, from the actual mainland side and on the backside of Pine Island.
What kind of techniques are they using?
They're actually using those silly pompano jigs with with a shrimp tipped on them.
A whole live shrimp or a piece of shrimp?
Both.
Okay. And now, if you're going to – these jigs, they're actually a silly jig, but – originally started out as a banana jig. It was a walleye jig up in Lake Erie. They brought it down to Florida in the 70s, caught a lot of fish with it, faded out, came back out under a new name, Silly Jig. If you're going to put a shrimp on the trailer on there, are those guys, now I would be going through and putting the hook in from the bottom side of the head up through the bottom of the head and out the top. How are they doing it?
That's what the one guy said he was doing.
So he's making it look like it's actually following and not hooking it through the tail, so it's like jumping with it, just literally making it look like it's swimming.
He said he was just lightly dragging him, almost barely hopping him across the bottom. And then also over by Placida, fishing the entrance to the canal system going into Gasparilla Marina and into the Placida Marina right there. They've been getting them on those particular spots, because all those spots are a little bit sandy and kind of washboard bottom, which is usually a favorite for some of your flounder. They also got into a couple of redfish, some stingrays, of course. Those are always going to be a fun bycatch to that. So those would be kind of the areas where I'd be looking, is kind of along some drop-offs or edges or mouths of kind of canals.
All right. Now, let's see, we're talking about flounder. Pompano in the harbor. Now, the only place I've even remotely started to hear about pompano in the harbor is up on the inside of Hog Island. and why they'd be there. I mean, unfortunately, I don't have my computer, so I can't look up the water flows. But we will have, by next week, we'll have the computers to be able to tell you water flow on all the rivers and everything else. We kind of keep track of all that stuff. But I know the Peace River's down to about 5 foot, which means we got about a 3 foot wall of water still coming at us. I haven't checked the Myakka, but I'm going to assume it's down quite a bit, too.
Right.
But you figure with all that fresh water that you wouldn't get some of these fish up in there.
No, Pompano is just that one weird one that always seems to show up there at Hog Island for some unknown reason.
Yeah, I don't know why it is.
No real rhyme or reason to it. That's just one of those weird spots.
And I've checked the other side of that. What we're talking about is right at the mouth of the Myakka River. And Hog Island, if you're going upriver, Hog Island's on the right. If you're coming out, it'd be on your left, obviously. I mean, because you're going backwards. But that's a real sandy flat there with little grass patches mixed in and actually pretty shallow water. It goes up to a foot deep as you get closer to the island,
right?
But it might just be the bottom there. It might be good feeding territory for them, because usually if I find them there, it's in about 3 to 5 feet of water, which is out quite a ways from the island. It's more right out by the river.
Oh yeah, it's a solid quarter of a mile or better.
Yeah, it's out quite a ways. Where else are they hearing about Pompano?
North end of Pine Island, like right there around Boquilla, down to the Smokehouse, over to Jug Creek Shoals. And then also they've been getting them right there, basically cruising back and forth in front of between Cape Hayes and Devilfish. Those fish are not in the bunches, I guess, from what I'm understanding. Those guys are just catching them as bycatches. They were looking for snook and redfish.
All right. With the Pompano, same jig, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
Now, if you're going to do bait, I would say two good baits would be sand fleas under a bobber or free-lined, or smaller shrimp under a bobber or free-lined.
Yeah, that would probably be a good way to do it. I'd be more personal with the confidence of doing it free-lined just because I'm not a great Pompano fisherman.
See, and I'm just the opposite. I want to use a float or a bobber to keep me in the strike zone longer, because when you freeline, they tend to drift down so much.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, I'm going to regress and go back, and I'm going to regress to my troglodyte self. No, I'm not going to go that far back. All right, but finding Pompano can be one of the most simple fish to find. You can actually skip them.
Yeah.
You skip them with your boat. You're driving along, get going around 20 miles an hour. So you're on plane, but not really running that fast. And get out in about 5 feet of water off the sandbar, east or west side, off Hog Island, 5-6 feet of water, and just drive. Now, if you got two people on a boat, one guy drives and looks in front of the boat. The guy who's going to see the fish is the other guy with them. You don't want the driver to turn around and look behind him all the time. But as you drive over a school of Pompano, something about the prop wash makes them shoot up out of the water. Have you ever seen those videos of the carp up in Illinois?
Yeah.
You know how they go along and they actually smacking into people?
Yeah.
But they'll actually jump like before the boat alongside it. The Pompano, I've had guys who had good day Pompano fishing just from the ones that landed in their boat.
Yeah.
And they'd pop out of the water, and next thing, bam, down on the deck, and here's a Pompano laying in the boat. But once they skip out of the water, now the trick is to figure out, were they going north, were they going south, which direction were they going? Because you're going to swing the boat around and try and fish for them. Now you have the option, you've skipped out of Pompano, slowly bring the boat back while you turn out away from the sandbar towards the open water, and you're going to come back in on them and either cast the jigs or you're going to throw your shrimp either freeline or under the bobber. Now, I do the bobber because I'm using a popping cork. I fish them just like I do trout. Same way, except I put the hook a little back a little further. I'm not going all the way up on the head because pompano tend to short strike a bit. So I hook the shrimp in the middle rather than up by the head. That way, because any jig is a good pompano jig if you cut all the fur off to immediately behind the hook.
Right.
You know, you got that.
Yeah, the little tiny bucktails and just.
Right, if you take a small bucktail. You got the hook coming out and it goes up, and where the curve of the hook is, if the feathers or the mylar or the bucktail goes more than, say, a quarter inch or so behind that bend of the hook, you'll feel the hits, but you'll never get the fish.
Yeah, they love to short strike, like you said.
So what I do is just take a pair of scissors and trim it down. And that's why when I'm fishing the shrimp under the popping cork, I actually hook them behind the head, side to side through the tail, so it's almost at the center of the shrimp. Because if I hook them through the head, I lose a lot of tails, but I don't catch many fish.
That makes sense.
Now, how do you do it when you're freelining?
I'm going to just hook them right through the head, to be honest, and just depending on whether I'm drifting or if there's a really strong current or wind, I may have to add a small split shot just to weight it down just a little bit more. And the only reason why I really do that is I know that they do feed closer to the bottom because they do feed a lot on crustaceans, but I'm also hoping to increase my odds of possibly getting like maybe a redfish that might be down around some of those little sandier bottom sand holes, or possibly a flounder as a bycatch.
All right, but now, sand fleas, you can buy them frozen at most bait shops. Most of the bait shops will have frozen sand fleas. You can get them blanched or regular. The blanched ones actually, to me, look better. I don't know what blanched means, but I think it's boiled or something.
Yeah, I think they're just put in some hot water for a minute.
And they're actually a nice brighter color. They're a little more white and red, a little brighter color. The natural sand fleas, the unblanched ones, actually are pretty dull. But if you're going to go get them, you can actually catch them yourself. Now, this you can do it at a beach, but it has to be a real beach. Englewood, yeah. Boca Grande, Gasparilla, Venice. And you get a Florida snow shovel. And Florida snow shovel is that stick with the metal basket on the bottom. And you dig it into the water's edge, and it's full of mesh, wire mesh. It's like quarter inch, some kind of wire mesh.
Hardware cloth.
Hardware cloth. That's what I was looking for. Thank you, sir. I knew there was a reason we were doing this together. My encyclopedia, Robert. And, you expect, you got to have that kind of stuff, encyclopedia knowledge, when you're here at WKDW 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio, broadcasting out of Northport to Port Charlotte, Englewood, and the surrounding areas, and let's not forget our farmers, friends, ranchers out there all over the place. A lot of nice folks out there. Anyway, back into it. You can catch sand fleas right on the beach with these sand flea scoops or Florida snow shovels. You dig in right at the water's edge. Usually when you go to the beach, you're going to notice where the waves lap up. Right at the edge, there's about a 6-inch to 10-inch drop-off right as you enter the water.
Right.
You scoop up the sand in there, and then you dip it up and down, and the holes in the hardware cloth on it, the steel mesh, just big enough, it lets all the sand wash out. Inside, you're left with shells, shark's teeth, and you're going to see a little critter in there about as big as the end joint of your pinky finger. And they call them sand fleas because they look like a monstrous flea. They get the legs, and you can see the legs on them. They don't bite. They won't hurt you. Just pick them up, put them in a bucket, and only take what you need. Remember, for every two you take, there's 500 not there the next year. So just take, half a dozen or a dozen for what you need to fish. If you get into a bunch of them, don't take 200 just because you can. It's not fair to nature. We got to always let nature regrow, make new babies, let them out there.
Let it replenish itself.
So anyway, when I have a live one, I turn it upside down, look at the legs, and where the legs are, they point towards the back of the sand flea. And I put the hook in just a little bit in from the back and out from the bottom to the top, trying not to go in too much. So I'm going in an eighth of an inch or so and bringing the hook in from the bottom, bringing it out the top. Allows the sand flea to swim away from the hook. And that allows them a little more, you're putting live bait on, you want it to move around.
And look as natural as possible.
Exactly. But I'm only using a number 6 or number 4 hook. Pretty small one.
Right.
And because I don't want a lot of hooks sticking out. And I historically use the gold one. I like the gold color when I'm using the sand fleas. I don't know why I don't use it.
It's that Mustad, the sheep's head hook.
Yeah, I think it's a 91-137 or something like that. I can't remember the number, but it's gold. It's a forged hook. It's gold. Don't use the bent wire. These fish will straighten them out. Can't use a crappie hook on them. Got to be a forged hook. And I'll remember the number on another show. anyway, but that's a great way to hook those pompano. And I'll do them under a float as well and just let them swim around in circles under the float. Now make it as long as I can and cast it, which is usually about 3, 3.5 feet. You can't really cast much more than that.
Yeah, it gets too awkward, and sometimes it tumbles and tangles up in itself along the way, or you throw the bait off real easily.
So, you know, as far as inshore, there's quite a bit of trout. I would say if you want a lot of trout, the easiest thing to do is go to the east side, find out wherever the crab traps are. With the wind, now this weekend, the wind's going to be blowing out of the northeast on Saturday. Now, it's going to be switching northwest on Sunday, but when it's out of the northeast, every 10 miles an hour, you can lose 6 inches of water if it's blowing consistently from the night all into the day while the water goes out. Low tide's not till like 3 o'clock. So I would go into Pirate Harbor, go in at the channel markers. If you're not familiar with the area, shut the boat down, idle in, and go about halfway between. You're going to see 4 pilings on your right-hand side, the ice house pilings. Then you're going to go about halfway to where you see land and turn and go north. If you run it, you'll probably be all right. You've got about 2 feet of water for the most part there. As you get up, it's going to get a little deeper. Go about 3 islands north and then shut down to idle. And go all the way off to your, as you're going to be heading right, so you're going to go to your northeast or off your right-hand side. Get up by the islands and throw a line out. One line should be just the shrimp and a hook and leader. The other line should have a bobber on it. The wind should drift you right out by the sandbar. As that wind drifts you out towards the sandbar, you're going to get hits quite often. Now, if you get a hit and it's a 14-inch trout, everything in that little area is going to be 13.5 to 14.5. They're only going to vary about an inch.
Yeah, that's normal. Normal when they school up, you know, they're always in close to the same size fish grouped up together.
And we found as we drifted out, we hit different size fish. It went down. We got smaller for a little while. As we got further out, we got some bigger ones. But actually, some of the bigger ones were closer to the island and out by the bar on the edges. In the center of our drift, we got a lot of fish, but they were all smaller ones.
Yeah, and it's still a little early for good groupings of the fish. You know, I think the number one mistake people are making right now, no matter what species they're going after out there in the boat, is they're putting their anchor down and they think they made a house.
Oh, yeah, just set up a mailbox. I can receive, you know, get my TV guide here. You know, let me get my, you know, satellite dish set up, and I'm just going to move in.
Yeah. The guys that are doing good are moving. They're moving a lot. They spend 15 minutes to a half hour at the most at each spot.
Well, that's going to bring you into the redfish. You got to move to find the redfish.
Yeah, definitely.
If you've got a trolling motor, best bet, turn it on as slow as it'll go and put a shrimp on the hook and start casting at the islands. And just go as slow as you can, going all around the islands. Keep casting and... Kind of, if you ever watched a bass fishing show where the guys just pitch it up there, let it sit for a few seconds, and reel it slowly for about the first 3 feet, just barely moving it, and then real quickly bring it back in and cast it back out again.
Right, and that works really well, but a cool trick that works well right now, this time of year, is you've got your mullet are kind of getting into that pre-spawn mode, so you're starting to see little to larger schools of them out there on the flats. And behind some of the islands, and redfish a lot of times follow those schools of mullet because those mullet disturb the bottom either by casting a bigger shadow or going down and chewing on the sand for their gizzard that they have. And that spooks up a lot of little crabs and shrimp and little minnows and gets them disoriented. And the redfish are right there to take advantage of that.
And I'm going to call, in the words of Colonel Potter, horse hockey. I can't tell you how many times I've thrown, oh, look, there's mullet here. There's got to be redfish. And never see a redfish. I mean, I've gone through, and my younger days when I was first learning snook and redfish and mullet and all that, I've chased schools of mullet thinking that they were redfish. But everybody tells me exactly what you do. So I'm going to say there might be some truth to this. But we are on the official WKDW 97.5 FM here in Northport. And I want to be truthful to the folks, and I'm calling it horse hockey. I don't care. I don't know that I've ever caught a redfish when I've seen a lot of mullet.
Yeah, but you're getting older and forgetting some things because the one time that I had good success.
Did you guys hear that? I am the man, the myth, the legend, the walk around, living legend guy here, and I'm getting old. Well, that could be true.
But you taught me a lot of stuff. You have taught me a ton of stuff.
I taught you how to be sarcastic with the old guy, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Okay, yeah, I did. Okay,
I've watched how you talk to your father. One time you took me out fishing when you and the one doctor used to go fishing every week.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys were fishing the bushes, and you kept busting my chops because I kept casting out in the open, and I was casting to the mullet, and I caught one oversized redfish out of that, and then I caught two smaller redfish that day, all casting into the mullet.
Yes. I had a little whippersnapper there. I finally, I guess I lack my age.
I mean, right? I haven't done it. Yeah. He could still whoop me in a skinny minute.
I can whip an entire bag of marshmallows with two hands. I'm right. Still there. I've got it. I'm good. Right.
It does happen. You know, it's like anything else. There's certain times, I mean, you're the master of triple tail, and I can't catch those to save my life.
No, I love fishing triple tail.
And they always say about them.
You notice now he's trying to suck up. Do you know who writes the paychecks around here? Any idea whose name is on the paycheck around here?
Yeah, I already admitted you were the teacher.
You'd think after 21 years of working together?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to switch gears here for a minute. I'm going to take a step into freshwater. Bass fishing. The problem with this cold weather is air gets cold really quick, and it takes water 4, 6, 8 times as long. If we get cold weather now, the surface will cool down, but if every foot you go down, it takes another hours upon hours to get it cooled. So it's not really dropping the water temperature much. By Saturday, this is Thursday, and did it get colder yesterday? Yeah, it got cold yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay, it was Wednesday, so today's Thursday. I'm all right, boys and girls. Don't worry. I'm right here. I'm paying attention. All right, now we're going to go. By Saturday, that water's going to be a little cooler. So I'm going to say buzz baits, and take the buzz bait and get the one with the metal blades, not the plastic blade, because I want to take that metal blade, and I'm going to roll it, curve it just a little bit more so I can slow down, get just a little bit more slop to it, and I'm going to throw that buzzbait out. I'm going to bring it back just under the surface, just enough so that blade's coming out throwing water, and that's going to be good till around 9 o'clock in the morning, maybe 10, but I'm going to say before 9. And then again, in the evening, it gets dark, what, about 7:30 now? So
yeah, 7:30.
I'm going to say 5:30, 6 o'clock, the buzzbait will again be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But once you hit in the morning, you're throwing that buzzbait, because I love watching that topwater blow up. And I'm going to switch to a spinnerbait, slow roll. I want double willow leaf. I want the first blade gold, second blade silver. And I'm going to slow roll it, probably a white and chartreuse pattern. And what would your bet for largemouth be?
Shiners.
Coward.
I'm going easy.
I'm here. I'm trying to give you a description, trying to make this up good. And what I got? Shiners. Okay.
Shiners are just proving themselves over and over and over again. Yeah.
All right. Number two choice, if you say night crawlers, you know, we're going to have to really.
I'm going to say worms. I don't want to go worms. Plastic worms.
You're going plastic. All right. Plastic. Give me a plastic worm. What are we going to do?
I'm going to rig it up probably Texas rig style, but I'm not going to use a bullet weight. I actually love throwing my worms just with the weight of the worm itself, so it sinks a lot slower.
Always nice when a man loves his worms.
Yes.
Yes. A man and his worm. It's a fishing story. And we're going to be catching bass with this. Now, how do you cast it? I know how I rig it. I'm using that Yum Dinger. Now, I don't know what you. Yeah, I know. Don't even tell. Don't even call. I don't want to hear it. I want emails over it. But, you know.
Your book sounds better than my dinger.
All right, now what are you doing?
I'm going to rig it up weedless. I'm going to cast right along the shoreline. You know, most of the places where I fish for bass and most of the places around this area, are mostly shore accessible unless you've got like a kayak or a John boat. So I'm pitching next to the spill dams, some of the culvert pipes, and just working it really, really slow. Most of the time, just kind of dragging it. I don't even hardly ever hop it.
Now, I'm using those Senkos or Yum Dingers or whatever. Now, the Yamamoto, the Senkos or whatever they are, they're like $7-$8 a pack. I'm sorry. You're going to get to know me. I'm cheap. I'm using the $2.99 a pack Yum Dingers. To me, it's close enough. They look the same to me. So they say the salt in the other one makes it float more. Yeah, tough. Okay. All I do is when I'm rigging those up, those trick worm things, I put my hook in about an extra inch into the worm, and I rig it weedless, and I toss it out, but I dead stick it at that point. I want to throw it, and I'm going to throw it close to any kind of structure. Let it sink to the bottom. Don't get in a hurry about this. Watch your line. You want to watch until your line quits falling in the water. Once your line quits going down the water, that means your bait's on the bottom, and it's there. Count to five if you can. I get real impatient. I'm not twitchy. No, I'm not. I'm not twitchy. I can't. No, I can't be patient. Then I start twitching it back, and I twitch it, work it back kind of like I would a jerk bait. But, and I repeat that process, but it's 90% of them are on the drop. The reason I'm hooking it back further in the worm, if you hook it closer to the head, it nosedives down and doesn't stay in the water as long. I want it going down as flat as possible so it has a little more water resistance, slows down the fall, keeps it in that strike zone a little better.
A little bit of horizontal drop, basically, more than anything else.
Yeah, it'll kind of rotate around and curl down. It doesn't really fall as straight and flat as I would have thought. It does kind of make a loop going down or whatever, but the more the hooks in the front, you added weight to the front of it, it falls faster because it's like a skydiver coming down with his arms out flat, and then all of a sudden he kind of tucks everything in and heads down. He really increases speed.
Right.
So, but worms are really good all year, but this cooler weather, this is going to kind of kick that pre-spawn thing. They're going to actually start thinking about, hey, I want to gain some weight, you know, look good for the girls, you know, the girls are, you know, going to kind of bulk up, you know, get a lot of junk in that trunk and, you know, really be appealing. So,
well, and a lot of people don't realize, like, bass in Florida actually start to go on bed as early as late October, early November, depending on the type of situation.
So the cool weather. Big question. Number one question on many, many people's minds. Crappie. What is the crappie? Crappie. The speckled perch.
How about specs?
Specs, yes. All right. They're specs.
A couple of guys have been doing good. Teddy's been in lately, and he's been doing fairly well on them.
Now,
he said they're not balling up tight yet, but they are definitely starting to move around and get a little bit more active.
Now, the weird thing is, when I fished them up north, I was always looking, because we kind of knew the lakes, you can drag Christmas tree out, drop it off. We don't do that here in Florida, because we don't have ice to walk out on a lake and drop something down. It would just drift away in the canal or rot up or whatever. But look for pepper trees. For some reason or other, they seem to like spawning under the pepper trees, and I think they've got that heavy leaf cover on the top, but the roots or the branches go down into the water and make a very tangled thing, kind of like what do you call it when you got a bunch of stuff on the bottom structure, you know? If you're going to put a stack of Christmas trees up, that creates a very tangled structure for the crappie to hang out in.
Right.
And I think it's all those roots and branches and everything else in the water under the pepper trees that attract the crappie there. That's the only thing that makes sense, because most of the canals, wherever you can walk up and fish, look up and down, and if you see a larger pepper tree sticking out, put a minnow on a bobber, cast it over towards there, or a jig under a bobber. Have you heard any good colors in the jigs yet?
Not yet. The guys are just kind of experimenting, but if I was going to do it, I'd probably be sticking with the faithful one of white or chartreuse. Yeah, you know, those are kind of the two.
I'd say white with the red dot or the chartreuse with the black line.
Right.
One of those two would probably be the best on a beetle spin. And if you're going to cast it, reel it in using the spinner, but if you're going to put it out under a float, just take the spinner off and tie the little jig and put it out under a bobber, especially if you got a little bit of a breeze, because the waves rippling across the top are going to make that jig go up and down. You don't have to jig it. The waves, yeah, will, that ripple on the water will jig it for you and find out if there's any crappie there. Anyway, looking for the crappie, big, big news. WKDW, news alert! The water's getting cold. The crappie are going to start biting. Okay.
Is it getting cold or is it just cooling off?
It's cooling off, but it was cold for me. I was freezing.
Yeah, but
I actually
still
built a fire in the fireplace this morning.
But you just explained it, that the air temperature gets cold quicker than the water temperature does.
You're
so
not supposed to pay that much attention.
People talk about all the time. They think it gets cold, and all of a sudden they think all these animals are going to chew, and it's the equivalent of putting a small ice cube in a hot cup of coffee. Really,
yeah,
doesn't change much. So if now, we get this secondary cold front comes through, I could see it dropping a couple degrees, but this I don't think is going to do a whole lot. It's just going to get things fired up and moving around a lot more than it has been.
Now, one thing about this, if you're going to go out Saturday, you got a 70% chance of storms after about 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, winds out of the east, and they're going to be going to northeast, eventually northwest on Sunday. And that's going to change the parameters from Saturday to Sunday, with the wind coming out of one direction and then the other direction. Saturday, the water's going to be lower than normal. On Sunday, you're not going to have that wind affecting the tide. Northwest really does not give us more or less water, but east definitely reduces the amount of water we have in the salt water, except in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, you have to be realistic when you're thinking tides and rainfalls. You know, a little while back, we actually had a guy came in and canceled a charter. This was during when Harvey was hitting Texas, and God bless you, Texas. We love you guys over there. So many of you visit here. So many of our people go over there. We hope you're getting better. And Rockport, we know it's still destroyed. Rockport Rattlers, one of our major brands of jig heads, is home-based in Rockport, hence Rockport Rattler. And they're still having a real, real tough time over there. And just like some of our friends down in Chokoloskee, Everglades City, and the Keys, bad thing when you bring up hurricanes. But there was so much rain. They were talking about all this rain that this guy canceled his charter because he thought the Gulf of Mexico would be too, the level of water would be too high. It wouldn't be safe out there. Now, you got to always take a grain of salt with all this stuff. It's impossible to raise the level of the Gulf of Mexico without raising the Caribbean Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, the Indian Ocean, the Japanese. I mean, it's all connected. You can't raise the level of the Gulf from rain. It doesn't work that way. But in Charlotte Harbor, because it has kind of a north-south aspect, and we'll get our water through the passes, winds out of the east blow the water out of the passes, does not let it come back in. So the water will get shallower and shallower. Stronger the wind, the less water. Look at after during Harvey, there was 6-8 feet of water less than what we had right now. And that was due to the wind. But for Saturday, we're going to be about 6 inches lower than normal because of the wind. But by Sunday, that's going to change. We're not going to have that. But northwest wind is going to be tough to hide. So you're going to have to get out in your now, I think it's about 10 miles an hour out of the northwest, which might be okay in the Gulf. I mean, maybe. It's hard. But if it goes at like midnight to the northwest and it's blowing all night, it's going to get a bit rough out there. It's going to be a bit goofy. But Saturday, that near Gulf, and right now Spanish mackerel and king mackerel, very close to shore, 20, 30 feet of water.
Yeah. Yeah, between actually 15 feet and 30 feet of water has been
15 to 30 feet. And that's going to be dead calm with that east wind because the water's coming over the islands, can't grab the water there.
Right.
So it's going to be beautiful fishing, but you're going to need a boat because you're going to be 15 to 30 feet of water. What are they catching? How are they catching them?
Basically, they're just kind of paralleling the beaches and looking for either birds diving or some of the schools of bait. And then kings and Spanish mackerel frequently free jump, you know, while they're in feeding.
Whee!
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, up we go.
They don't jump the way mullet jump. They actually just launch straight up into the air. So you just got to keep your eye out on the horizon and look for anything jumping out of the water.
I have this amazing story about somebody in free jumping king mackerel and what are those, the things you get stuck in swim along, jellyfish.
Oh, jellyfish.
And the jellyfish spines and how you're supposed to treat jellyfish spines. But I can't talk about it on the air because it's kind of naughty. Anyway, needless to say, somebody was reeling in a king because they were out fishing, skyrocketing kings, and a jellyfish tentacle, one of those long ones, the 10, 15 footers, came up on the line and got on the person's legs where his shorts were. And the other ones were telling him that very salty, warm liquid coming out of your body has enough ammonia in it to neutralize the pain. Well, when he went to apply, naturally, the warm, salty water, he had stuff, tentacles that was stuck on his chest. And when he brought the appendage out to, you know, apply the warm, salty water, the stuff fell off his chest and onto his appendage. And now they're jumping around the boat, just have, never mind, I know, it's a bad story, but it was really funny. It was horrible, but it was funny.
Oh, it's funny when it's happened to somebody else.
Yeah, it wasn't me. I was good. You know, I could sit there going, all right, I get this. But so, Spanish mackerel, king mackerel, you're going to troll for them. How fast are you trolling?
Anywhere from 3 to 6 miles an hour, you know, depending on the plugs that you're using.
Yeah, I start off between 2 and 3 miles an hour, get my baits out. I'm going to definitely have a storm twitch. I know I talk about that goofy lure all the time, but I would have a storm twitch. I'm going to put a Rapala 15 diver, one that will go down about 15 feet. I'm going to try and use the mackerel colors or the dolphin colors. Then on the top, probably a spoon. And what's the last one? What's your best bet?
For like close to the surface, I'm going to probably maybe do a cedar plug.
Ah, good choice. Just painted or raw?
Raw. Just plain wood.
It's the most ridiculous thing in the world. It's a chunk of wood with some lead on the front of it and a hook sticking out.
Right.
Literally a chunk of wood. I mean, we're not talking paint. We're not even talking varnish. It's a piece of cedar, like a piece of a broom handle, but
it's
made
out
of cedar.
Yeah,
it looks like a little torpedo with a lead head. And they beat the heck out of it. Who would have ever guessed? You know, all right, so...
The other thing I'm going to probably do...
I hate getting outsmarted by something that is outsmarted by a chunk of wood.
Yes.
That is insulting. Insulting, I tell you. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
If I want just the kings, I'm going to actually slow troll in that 15 to 20 feet of water with probably a ladyfish, dead or alive, I don't care.
I would drift.
And a blue runner.
Yeah, drifting, pinfish, ladyfish, blue runners... anything like that, that natural bait's going to do better. You're going to really do a lot better in the kings.
Right. And with that, usually when you're in that shallow water, you're finding the very large kings. They're usually going to be in that 25 to 35-pound range, but you're only fishing for a couple fish all day long. It's not going to be...
It's not fast and steady, but you can get into a lot of the Spanish mackerel. Take a bomber lure, a 16, long A, redhead, white body, a 104, put about 2 feet of steel, tie it to the back eye, and put a aught squid spoon after it. Troll that along. You'll catch more Spanish than you've ever caught in your life. But, you know, if you don't know how to do it, stop the store. Stop at Fish and Frank's, and we'll show you how to do it. It's a Fish and Frank rig, something I invented years ago as a joke on my dad. But getting around to kind of offshore, what's a good a pier or beach where there's liable to be fish right now?
I've been getting mixed reports from most of the piers, but Placida seems to be the most consistent one the last couple of days.
All right. How's Tom Adams doing there at the Anger Pier? I like saying Anger Pier. Makes me feel like a pirate.
Right. I haven't heard much of the last several days except for
right,
a couple
then
guys
forget
snook fishing.
Anger Pier. Let's go back to Placida. What's going on, Placida?
There's been some snook fishing at night and even during the day. They've been getting a few of those. A couple guys have caught a few Spanish mackerel, some mangrove snapper, and I've heard of a couple flounder there. A couple guys are seeing some sheep's head around the pilings, but nobody's really catching them that I've heard of. I don't know if you've heard much, because I know you've been in the shop quite a bit this week and chatted with some different people, but it's been good, but not gangbusters. It seems like the beaches are the more active places to fish right now.
All right, so which beach? Minnesota, Gasparilla?
All of them. I've been fishing.
So don't go out on a limb here, you know. Well, let's right, we're going to have to pin Robert down. I got $5 that he won't pick a spot, but, you know, never mind. All right, you know, go ahead. What are you talking about?
The most consistent reports I've got have been from Boca Grande, basically from the middle lighthouse, which
Suckered him into it, didn't I? Now you've got him.
Well, it's still a broad area. I'm going to cover a two-mile stretch of beach. From the lighthouse, which is First Street, to the very end down to the pass itself. There you have been getting the snook, some whiting, pompano, even a couple of bonnethead sharks. Early morning, there has been some. Early morning, there has been some big redfish cruising right along the beaches too that some of the guys are seeing. I haven't heard of anyone hooking any of them, but they haven't
now,
seen the big.
The only place I know that they're hooking those big redfish down by Redfish Pass. And appropriately named, I guess.
Right.
But Redfish Pass, possibly Ponderosa, but more at Redfish Pass for some reason. They're seeing a lot more of the big, monster, oversized breeder redfish. What a wonderful fall this has been. Still no. I get the red
Don't
tide updates.
Oh,
yeah, I know. We're going to get a red tide. But how long before the spawn's done?
It's usually done about this next moon.
Okay, so if we don't get a red tide in this by the next moon.
What, 10 days?
Yeah, like 10 that. Days. This will be the first year in a few years that we have not lost almost all of our redfish babies. I don't care about these, you know, 30, 40 inch redfish that are dead on the beach. What I worry about is the 10,000 tiny ones you can't see that are a half an inch, quarter inch long that died and you just didn't notice. And those are the ones, the reason the red fishing is slow, in my opinion, is we've had year after year of red tides during the spawn and right after the spawn. We've lost so many redfish to that. And this next year and the year after, if this holds true, if we don't get a red tide here for 2 weeks, we are going to have a banner crop of redfish next year. Massive. Next year, you're going to start seeing a lot of smaller ones. It takes about a year for them to get close to that slot. But within 2 years, if we can do this year and next year, we're going to have some of the best red fishing on the planet if we just have 2 years without red tide. So before we finish up our report, I'm going to introduce you to somebody. Joe is running the sound and producing the show for us today so we can figure out what we're doing. You want to say hi, Joe? I know you fish. You can't lie.
I'd love to say hi, Joe, but this is RJ.
RJ. Oh, man, I'm sorry, RJ.
That's because we're all getting old, Frank.
I keep getting reminded of that. Well, you know, every time I turn around.
Rob gave me 20. Rob gave me 20 bucks to say RJ, that. So.
Right. Anyway, RJ, I'm sorry. So here we are, our very first show on WKDW. I don't know why I could say that thing perfectly until I started having to say it. 97.5 FM. I know you fish. What kind of fishing do you like to do?
I like walking the shoreline. There's just something about walking the shoreline and finding what I can find and seeing what I can find. I really do enjoy that. And I like the riprap that's up on Manasota Key. I like walking up to there. They call it the reef locally. I don't know if it was ever actually a reef.
No, but a reef can be, it doesn't have to be out in the water. It can be up against land.
Right,
it can
yeah,
be anywhere,
and there's still quite a bit of structure that you can
We won't say how weird the people are up there for saying that. That won't come out of my mouth.
No, that's right.
Yeah, no, and it never passed my lips. Yeah,
the only thing that chaps me, you know, when you're walking the beach is you've got a lot of these homeowners that got big, giant mansions that have decided to put some kind of blockade to keep you from getting by dropping riprap and things like that. But
which is as illegal as you can do because every person in Florida is entitled to walk from the water to the high tide line.
That's right.
Public domain.
And there's places where you can't do that anymore. You know, yeah. I've been down here 25 years, and there's a lot of places that I used to be able to walk that I can't get to anymore.
Yeah, no, we see that happening a lot. And as usual, we live in a capitalistic society where money is everything. You know, that's why I still own a bait shop. I'm not going to be that guy. And I would if I had the opportunity. I would love to be that guy. But, you know, get off my beach. You know, I own all this. But,
oh, man. You know, it's going on everywhere. It's not just here in Florida. It's going on anywhere where there's waterfront.
Oh, everywhere around the planet. So, Anyway, Wanda, thank you very much for helping produce the show and kind of introduce everybody. It's a great little operation you have here. And Wednesdays, you guys do like a live thing with live music and stuff?
Open mic live. It starts at 7 o'clock in our Common Grounds Meeting Hall facility, which is right next door to the radio station. We usually get 12 to 15 different acts that come in and play acoustic music, get a poet every now and then. And we broadcast it live.
Wait a minute. I'm a bass player. You're a bass player. I guess we're going to have to fight over that guitar hanging on the wall. You know, I'm voting for arm wrestling because I get hurt.
I'd rather go to thumb wrestling myself. or who can take the most shots at Tullamore do. So
now nice. I've got some homemade. No, we can go ahead.
Oh yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
We go ahead.
We got a deal going here, guys.
All right. Well, anyway, we only got a couple more minutes of the show. And let's see, what did we forget, Robert? We did the beaches and all that. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Basically, the main thing is, like, if you're going to fish from the boat or from the shore, the passes have been by far the most consistent thing for multiple species. I mean, if you're just wanting to bend the rod, catch a large variety of fish, go to any of the passes, whether you go, I mean, I'm going to say the three most popular ones right now are Redfish, Captiva Pass, and Boca Grande Pass, because those are a little bit wider and a little bit deeper, have lots of variable structure all the way around them, from nice sandy ledges that drop off to real hard bottoms in the center with palm trees and all sorts of other garbage down there that holds all sorts of structure. So you can literally fish right along the edge of the shoreline for whiting, pompano, and flounder, move out to the center and go for mangrove snapper and possibly a legal gag grouper. You know, and then certain spots are holding redfish and snook. And standing on the shoreline, you can kind of experience the same thing depending on the distances that you cast. So it would be my personal choice if I was going out this weekend. I'd be staying on shore because I don't know what the wind's going to do.
Actually, Sunday's supposed to be pretty good, but it's going to be coming out of the northwest.
Yeah, but that's the weatherman guessing a few days ahead of time. I'm just going to stay with the safe factor. I'm going to stand on the shoreline. That way I can walk along the beach. If the wind happens to be blowing out of the east, it's going to be nice and calm and not soupy in the pass. Or if it's nice and calm, I can fish right there in the pass itself. Got lots of options when I'm on my feet.
Gotcha.
And if it looks really bad, I can just stay home. But, yeah, but at least I have multiple options.
Yeah, I like the options too. Now, one thing, if you're up on the rivers, the snook are starting to move up the river. We're getting more snook. I've had reports of big snook up around Northport, right where it hits 41 by that dam. I've had big reports of big snook up at the San Suchi Trestle. So I'm going to go up and try for them. Hopefully Sunday I'm going to get out and see if I can get onto some of them. Still snook season, so as long as you have your snook permit, you can get them. Just keep in mind, if you're out fishing in Florida and you're not from the state of Florida, you do not have a Florida driver's license, you need a fishing license to fish anywhere and anywhere, any place in Florida, freshwater, saltwater. If you're a Florida resident who is 65 years old or older, that is your driver's license, is your fishing license. It covers your freshwater, saltwater management areas, everything. But a Florida resident with a Florida driver's license, Florida ID, can get a free saltwater fishing license to fish from piers, docks, and all that. But it does not work in freshwater. No matter where you are in freshwater, you have to have a license unless you're under 16 years of age. Anyone under 16 years old, if you're 15 or less, you don't need a fishing license anywhere that I know of in the United States, including Florida. It's still part of the U.S., but possibly California, because we're not sure they're still part of the U.S., but we're hoping that they're still here. At least Napa Valley, they're good folks. We might be able to lose Los Angeles and not really cry about it, but, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't say that. Anyway, we're sitting here. I can't think, what's the one best bet if you just want to have some fun? If I was in a boat, I just want to have some fun, and I was up in Charlotte Harbor, I would go just south of Ponce and start idling down, trolling a Rapala 08 OG on one side and a Storm Twitch on the other, maybe something else, but I know I want those two. And I'd be trolling south looking for birds diving and getting into those schools. There's millions upon millions of ladyfish down there. The kids have a ball with them. If you've got somebody who really just wants to reel one fish in after another, that's the way to do it. They're a lot of fun. You can use paddle tail jigs. What's your best bet for having fun?
I'm going to go out and just fish some of the little canals for some bluegill and tilapia and even the Mayan cichlids that have been chewing really well lately. That's going to be my most entertaining thing going on. So, you know, using worms or little beetle spins, because a lot of guys are talking about how well they've been doing on all the panfish lately.
And the Mayan cichlid are excellent eating. So
very good eating.
Anyway, this is Fish and Frank. And that's Robert in a chair across from me. And with our producer, and this is WKDW Radio 97.5. We'll be here every Thursday from 1 to 2 o'clock, catching up what's going on with the weekend, where to go, what to do, and what to catch. Thanks for listening, y'all. Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Fishy, fishy. Okay, you're clear.
That all right?
Good show, yeah.